turning to Jerry, obviously you work at Health Scotland and you're also very much involved in thinking about sort of strategic approaches, etc. So I suppose what do you feel, what's the role of national health policy where, you know, if it's still favouring lifestyle issues in trying to address some of these structural and much more complex problems that Phil set out?
Okay, I drew the short straw, as you probably realised. Anybody that follows Phil when he's been speaking is clearly going to get shown up when they try and speak in public. So I'll try my best to answer Rosie's question, which is really about if health policy is focusing on individual lifestyle factors, as Phil alluded to, what does that mean for the future of Glasgow's health, for the future of Scotland's health? And my short answer to this is that it doesn't bode well. Health behaviours are worse in Glasgow. So we do drink more, we do smoke more, we do use more illicit drugs, we probably take less exercise, we probably eat not enough fruit and vegetables. But as Michael Marmot says in his big WHO report, to understand why that's the case, we need to look at the causes of the causes. It's not sufficient to just look at these health behaviours in isolation and pretend that they tell us the full story about what's going on within any community. Until last summer, I actually worked as a GP in Paisley, and we were very much encouraged in this lifestyle model to identify those patients who needed an aspirin tablet, who needed some statins for their high cholesterol, who would encourage people to take up exercise, to stop smoking, to adopt a whole range of healthy behaviours. But the problem with that is that both me and my patients knew that it wasn't a lack of an aspirin tablet or the lack of some simvastatin to lower their cholesterol that there was a problem. As Phil outlined, there's a whole plethora of things going on in the west of Scotland and Scotland as a whole that have generated poor health over a number of years. Indeed, if you go back to 1950, that's the last time when Scotland's overall life expectancy looked anything like the rest of Europe's. Since 1950, we've kind of struggled to keep up with the rest of Western Europe, but even by the end of that 30-year period, by 1980, we were still hanging on to the coattails of our European neighbours. But from 1980 onwards, we just diverged. The rest of Europe's health continued to improve, life expectancy went up, but Scotland and Glasgow just very gradually improved, kind of faltered. We're much more similar to the United States of America, and even more extreme to Eastern Europe, whose health faltered dramatically after that time, with life expectancy actually going down. Just before that faltering occurred, there was a lot of concern during the 1970s about inequalities in health between our richest and poorest communities. And Sir Douglas Black was commissioned by the Callaghan government to go and look and try and understand what was causing these inequalities in health. And he looked at four particular factors. He looked at whether it was an artefact, whether it was nothing to do with poverty, it was just, you know, something else going on, some X factor, if you like. And he rejected that out of hand. And this was 1980, remember. He then looked at health selection. Was it, in fact, that people who became sick fell in the social hierarchy, and that was what caused this apparent inequality in health? And again, the use of longitudinal studies and birth cohorts demonstrated that simply being born in a poor community then conferred a very adverse risk of mortality in future life. So that health selection effect was able to be rejected. The third explanation he looked at was whether behaviours and culture could explain what was going on. And again, he rejected that, not on the basis that behaviours and culture weren't important, but that it didn't fully explain what was going on. You had to look at the causes of behaviour and look at what factors influenced cultures if you were to explain inequalities in health. And what he concluded quite forcefully was that structural factors in society, such as housing, inequalities in income, poverty, a whole manner of things to do with the welfare state, these were the key factors in explaining why people in some parts of the UK, particularly Scotland and Glasgow even at that time, were dying many years younger than our counterparts south of the border. Unfortunately, Douglas Black's report became available under the Thatcher government, and only 200 copies were ever printed. It was published on a bank holiday Monday, no press release was issued, and the Thatcher government attempted to bury the issue forevermore. And it's only by testament of the determination of Douglas Black and Margaret Whitehead and others that that issue was kept on the public radar for so many years. But it was no accident that the government coming in 1979 sought to bury that whole issue that Douglas Black had raised about the structural causes of health inequalities in society, because they sought to very much put it on individuals. and blame individuals for their own health status. It was poor people that had failed to stop smoking. It was poor people that weren't taking enough exercise. And that was the real cause of health inequalities and the huge disparities in health between Scotland and England in that government's eyes. And that was married to a whole set of policies which I would argue that disproportionately affected Scotland as compared to other regions. If you think about the equalising institutions within society, the welfare state, the NHS, trade unions, the tenants' movements, council housing, all these shared experiences that particularly working class communities like Glasgow would have. Remember, in 1980, towns like Motherwell had 96% of their population staying in council housing. So it was a very, very dependent state, a very, very dependent community on these equalising institutions of the state. And they came under very explicit and very concerted attack for the next 20 or 30 years, where trade unions were seen to be the antichrist, where council housing was seen to be regressive and problematic, where the welfare state was going from being a universal institution to very much a targeted thing designed only for poor people. And these factors, I would argue, impacted disproportionately in Scotland and created very much a democratic deficit, where the people in Scotland were demanding one thing from their politicians, but in fact that was being reflected in a very different political reality for them. And I think that might help us explain in some way, although there are any number of competing theories as to why Scotland and Glasgow has such bad health status. I think without understanding the political context of that, it's very difficult to foresee a full explanation emerging. However, I don't think we should be despondent in thinking about Scotland's future health, despite the welfare cuts and the public spending cuts that we see around us today, because change is possible. If you look at time trends again of life expectancy over the last 30 years, there are many countries which started that time series well below Scotland. Portugal, Italy, Austria, and all of these countries improved their life expectancy much more quickly than we did. Over a period of only 5 or 10 years, they overtook us and became much more healthy. Even in Eastern Europe, you now see countries which, and regions, industrial regions not dissimilar to Glasgow, who have gained their independence, gained a real sense of autonomy and purpose, and have been, you know, nurtured by their governments. They have improved their health very dramatically and now are overtaking us very quickly in mortality and life expectancy stakes. What we see today, though, in terms of health inequalities is a true injustice in society. A baby born in Northwest Paisley has a life expectancy some 26 years less than the same baby born 2 miles north in Houston. That is a stark injustice which is, you know, it should upset us. It should upset our very humanity that people are being allowed to die so prematurely in this day and age in a developed country like Scotland. And I think the organisers of this meeting should be commended for bringing a focus onto this issue again today and drawing on the expertise of the whole community to try and think through these issues and think where we might go to from here. Thanks.
Thanks, Jerry.